This is episode 2 of Creative Block. I have a creepy confession to make. I had a stalker. She followed me for months. Finally, she attempted to make contact. She slid into my DMs, as the kids say, and asked if I wanted to meet. That person is who I'm talking with today. Lena Huffman is the co-owner of The Bridge, a co-working space located here in beautiful Calgary, Alberta. And she really did stalk me, not in a scary way, but in the 21st century social media way, which, if I'm being honest, might be scarier. My name is Kyle Marshall. I'm the owner of Media Lab YYC. It's a place that helps people and businesses tell their stories. We do that by having a public production studio that allows for the creation of podcasts and videos. I keep meeting interesting people who are artists or entrepreneurs or both. So I like to invite them here to the studio and talk with them. This is a great conversation we have here today. Even though I know Lena pretty well, this conversation uncovers things I never knew. It includes communist regimes, a robbery, and a flood. Let's go to it right now. All right, Lena Huffman, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
I know it's just a quick, like, short 2-minute walk from probably where you were down below.
Maybe 30 seconds.
Maybe 30 seconds, that's right.
Depending how long the elevator takes.
Let's start here. Explain to the audience a little bit about who you are and what it is that you currently do.
Okay, so I am Lena, like Kyle mentioned. I am an entrepreneur. I have been an entrepreneur for the last 18 years. I started my first business when I was 15, and I operated a jewelry design and manufacture business for 13 years until 2013, which was the year of the flood. And I got flooded out and then robbed the same year. So that put the kibosh on that business.
Yeah, that kind of puts the end to most businesses when that happens.
Slightly, just slightly, yeah. So I'm an artist at heart, hence the first artistic direction of my first business. I've had art incorporated into pretty much everything that I do. But I also took very many sidetracks into different businesses and different industries. From that, I've been an accountant. I've also worked construction. I used to be a tinsmith, so the people that put in the ductwork for your bathrooms and kitchen ranges.
Okay, I have a job for you then.
Okay.
That's great.
I haven't done that in probably like 12 plus years, so
okay.
Don't count on
me. Be a little bit rusty then at this point.
Yeah, my thumbs are a little bit rusty, yeah.
What do you do now? Like, what is the business that you're running now?
So currently I run The Bridge co-work space with my husband, Jess, and we've been in operation since December of 2016 at this point. That sounds like a really long time ago when I say it.
I know, yeah, but yeah. For some people that was only 2 years ago, but that is a long time in business terms of running your own thing. And
especially when you're just starting something.
Yeah.
That amount of time, it's literally felt like a lifetime.
Is this the first time you're actually, like, an actual space that you're running?
Yeah, so all of my businesses have been either me running them out of my house with, like, the jewelry business. I had shows and whatnot that I was doing out of the house, and then my other business, I was all online. So this is the first time I've actually occupied a space and had a lease and employees,
right,
and
right,
all of that fun stuff that goes along with it.
And there's so much stuff that layers onto that once you're not just responsible for yourself, but there's all these other people that are relying on you at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you start bringing other people into the mix, like employees, whereas before it was just you when you might have had some contractors, it really brings a lot of things to light, and it can really teach you some big lessons.
I'm interested in learning about those lessons, but because you kind of did your quick biography there, I want to delve into that just a little bit more. So take me like way, way back. Where were you born?
I was born in Romania.
Okay.
In the capital city of Bucharest, whichever way you like to see it. Say it.
I can't say it at all. So.
Yeah, Bucharest is the English version. Bucharest is how you say it in Romanian.
Right, right. Yeah. Your parents, what did your parents do?
Both my parents were economists, which I'm not actually sure what that translates to into like a North American job.
Right.
Title, but basically they worked for the government in finance and they traveled a lot.
When you say they traveled a lot, was that you traveling with them or that you stayed at home while they went to these different places?
Yeah, so we were at home and then they traveled with their job. Pretty much, I would say, like half the year, one of them was gone with travel.
Right, right. Yeah. Is there anything that they taught you that you still adhere to this day? Like, what is it that you took the most from your parents?
That I never want to be an employee. I tried it out for 7 years. I was a complete failure at being an employee.
What makes you a bad employee?
I talk too much. I don't like rules. I don't like micromanagers. I don't like being told how to do something that I know how to do better than. And I love being autonomous. Freedom is very important to me.
You don't like being told, like, you have to take your 15-minute break at this specific time. You have to be back at this specific time.
That my TMI pee breaks need to be 2 minutes, not five.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, right?
You don't take rules very well.
No, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. So when did you move away from Romania?
I moved here May 30th of 1997 is when we landed.
Okay. Well, what made you come here? And when I say here, depending on the people that are listening to this, what made you come to Canada specifically?
Nothing made me come here. Like, my parents made me come here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I didn't have a say in it, but...
Were you happy about that move or not so much?
No. I used to laugh at people that used to immigrate here and then they would move back to their country because I'm like, what's wrong with you? I mean, I don't particularly... This is going to sound horrible. I don't feel that Canada is my home. Like, I'm right. very appreciative of all of the privileges and freedoms that I have here. But I'm one of those people where my home country is where my heart is still. So I used to laugh and, like, why would you go back to your country when you live in Canada and you have healthcare and you're, you know, there's an actual democracy.
Right.
Not to be debated at this point. But you have all of these things that are going right. But now, as I'm getting older and having traveled back to Europe, like, I really left my heart there.
That's interesting. Forgive my ignorance. I do have to ask a question before we move on. Romania, does that have anything to do with, like, the Romani people? Or are those two separate things?
Slightly. Yeah, I mean, we call them Tsigani in Romania. But yeah, there's a huge population of them in Romania as well.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So... not really the same thing, but slightly different. So you move here to Canada here then. Was it always Alberta or were you in somewhere else when you first moved?
I've been in Calgary the entire time I've been here.
Okay. What was it about Calgary that invited your parents here?
Oil and gas industry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't fleeing persecution or anything like that at all. This was an actual deliberate choice to come here for an opportunity?
Yeah, no, we lived through, I was born into a communist Romania, so we witnessed Ceausescu's, him getting shot, basically.
Oh, assassination.
Like, execution, yeah, when they overthrow him from the presidency.
What was that like? Like, if you don't mind me asking, how old were you at that time?
So he was executed right before my fifth birthday. Okay. And, I'm not expecting you to know geography of Bucharest, but my grandparents used to live very close to his palace, and they lived right on this park, and there was an ice rink where part of his headquarters was set up. And I remember, like, gunshots coming through the window and, like, landing in the headboard sometimes. So it was intense, and you're, like, going to the market, and there was queues up for food, and there wasn't a lot on the shelves, and... obviously, there was some people that were more privileged than others. We had this rule back home where you couldn't eat food on the street because there was some people that couldn't feed each other.
Feed
their children, right? So I remember one time I was eating this chocolate bar walking down the street with my dad, and this little boy passed with his dad and begged his dad for a chocolate bar as well. And the dad said, no, we can't afford it. And, you know, I got the lecture of, this is why we don't eat food on the street, because we don't, you know, we don't rub our station in other people's faces, basically. So if you could afford a chocolate bar, you were fortunate.
Mm-hmm. That's just such a different reality than anything that I ever had to grow up with. Having always lived in essentially a consumerist society, it's like everything that you ever wanted was always available to you. So what was your access to, like, Western media like then?
We had none up until Ceausescu died. And then, honestly, I don't quite remember. I don't... remember much of what was on TV. I remember watching a lot of MTV Because I remember a lot of late night Michael Jackson documentary reruns that I watched, but that's kind of my main memory of TV.
Right, right. So when you come here with your parents then, they're off doing their boring jobs. Were they working for the Canadian government? No, you said an oil and gas company that they were working for then.
So my mom worked, so it was myself, my mom, and my sister that moved here. My dad came later. She worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When we moved here. So not technically oil and gas. She did become an oil and gas accountant, like a production accountant, and worked for oil and gas for a while, but that was later on.
What was your first job?
Babysitting.
Babysitting. Okay.
Yeah. And then like a champ, I worked at A&W. For about a month.
Slinging those teen burgers.
Oh my God, I stank so bad. So bad.
I always ask people this when they've worked like fast food or one of those like lowly retail jobs is your first job. Do you ever still go back to A&W?
Yeah. Yep.
You're totally fine.
We
going
love
back.
The breakfast at A&W. Yeah. I take one of those egg cheese and eggers and I take the hash brown and I put it in the cheese and egger. You got to try that sometime.
If anyone from the marketing team of A&W is listening, there you go. That's your next $100,000 seller right there. So A&W, first job, you're doing some babysitting as well. And then you said that your first kind of business was in jewelry. Is that your first foray into being an entrepreneur?
Yep. And it was, God, you're going to make me say a lot of things.
Yeah, that's all right. That's right.
It was jealousy, basically. So I worked at the bead store that was near my high school. I went to Western Canada, down on 17th Ave Southwest. And Beatles is a jewelry like a bead store. So people that make jewelry.
That's a great name for it.
Right? Yep. So I had a job there, and there was a girl in my school who had this really cool, like, beaded, shelled belt, and I was like, oh, where'd you get that? And she said, oh, I made it, and I'm like, well, I could do better than that, so I started my business. Oh,
that's amazing. Okay, so you were selling to people in the high school? Or not really?
What was I doing? Okay, so I started selling to, like, friends and family. Mm-hmm. It didn't really become like a big business, or it didn't make me a lot of money in the first few years because I was pretty concentrating on school. I lived on my own at that point, so I had to have like an actual job to pay my rent. But yeah, I think at 19, so about 4 years into it, it started becoming where I actually had like shows that I was putting on and had clients, stores that were buying my product and selling it. And
so, was there at any time this thought that was in your head being like, I can't do this, or why am I doing this? Or is it just something like, no, I just like doing this bead work, so I'm going to continue on with it?
Well, I can certainly tell you I have that WTF moment all the time about, oh my God, I can't do this, or why am I doing this currently? Thinking that far back, I think at any point when you're starting something new, and especially that young, and I didn't have a lot of influences of other business people around me at that time, I think that there must have been moments where I'm like, just want to throw my hands up. But I think at that age too, you're kind of head in the clouds, optimistic, like naive, maybe just a little bit too, where
naive in the right way almost though. Yeah, it's like, I haven't lived long enough to be like, I can't do that. I'm like, well, why not? Why shouldn't I just try?
Yeah. And I'm just the kind of person, I'm very stubborn. So I just keep on pushing on, even when I can't do that. I'll find a way to make it happen.
So what ended your bead company?
The flood and the...
Oh, right.
Yeah, the flood and the being robbed.
Okay, yeah. So just for people who are listening, in Calgary here, at least, where we're recording, there was this epic flood that happened in, was that 2013?
2013, yeah.
Yeah, in 2013, where the Bow River that flows through the city just overflowed quite a bit and flooded most of downtown. A lot of businesses went under because of that. Mm-hmm. So you were caught up in that. And then what was this robbery about?
So I lived in Bonas, right by Sunnyside. And we have the river that goes through right there, right?
We were living very close to each other then at the time.
Yes, yeah, which is really funny. Okay, so I'll tell you the story. So Bonas, I lived in the basement. My girlfriend Sabrina was somewhere and she asked me to go look at her place downtown because there was the floods that were happening. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What flooding? But funny enough, like a couple hours before, we were driving over the bridge and we were just thinking how crazy the river was, not really like putting two and two together. So anyways, we got evacuated because we were in Bowness right at, like, we were in the basin for where we were the most accessible for flooding in that area. And so I went and I rescued Sabrina's cat and dog from her apartment and like put up as much stuff above, you know, like a certain height in her apartment that I could. Took him to my place. Then we got the evacuation notice for Bowness right away. And then we actually ended up staying with my roommate's daughter and boyfriend, who lived literally 3 minutes away from where we live right now. So I was driving down this hill a couple months ago and I'm like, wait a second. I remember this house. Like, we stayed here when we were flooded. Right. Yeah, there was, there was like four dogs and like 10 cats and like 10 people in this little apartment that we stayed in while the flood was happening and while we were still evacuated. And then, so once all of that got cleared up, I took all my stuff out of the basement and I put it in storage. And I'm not buying the story from the people that owned the storage yard as to what happened. I think it was actually them, but that's neither here nor there now. It's been 5 years.
Yeah.
But basically, somebody broke into my storage unit. And what I did to kind of pretty up my area of where I worked, I had all of the caskets that the wine bottles come in.
Yeah.
And that's where I stored all of my jewelry supplies. And I worked with precious and semi-precious uncut, unpolished stones.
Wow.
And so when they broke into my storage unit, they must have thought that it was alcohol. So they took pretty much all of my supplies and then they stole my jewelry chest with my jewelry in it. I'm still pissed at you, whoever you are, by the way, because you stole my grandma's jewelry.
Oh, man.
When you robbed me. So, yeah.
I wonder if they even knew what they had, like if they legitimately knew what those were worth or... It was just literally, they thought it was alcohol and they were just going away with it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was pretty well like wrapped up with tape and whatnot. Mm. And I didn't work with rubies and diamonds and that kind of stuff. I worked with citrine and opals and labradorite and stuff like that. So not worthless, but not diamonds and gold and platinum. So
I've read a bunch of autobiographies that say that a lot of times like, tragedy can lead to greater things. So you are now without your business. You don't have the materials that you had at one time, flooded out of your home. So what was your next step? What did you do next?
Well, I was just getting together with my now husband. So the whole moving my stuff into storage was because we were living in a place that couldn't accommodate all of our things together. Before we bought our current house. So that was just kind of like a stopping place for my things. So that was happening in the background. But I mean, I think that everything happens for a reason. There's a lot of debate around this. I know there's lots of shitty things that actually happen in the world to lots of people. So I don't diminish that. But I still really do believe, and even with all the shitty things that have happened to me, that there's light at the end of the other end of the tunnel. And no matter how shitty now is, it's all working out for better and greater outcomes. So I might have lost my business and I lost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in inventory and the flood and all of that, but it was growth.
Yeah.
I mean, every single thing that I go through, that's like, that sucks.
But I'm learning a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And I think if you're not growing, then you're kind of just... Might as well just not be.
Was there any insurance on any of your stones?
That's the thing. Because of the floods, the insurance companies, and again, this is why I think that it was complete bullshit as to the story behind the robbery. And honestly, I didn't have the heart and the, I just didn't have the gusto at that point with everything that had been happening with the flood to actually pursue this any further. So there was some story about insurance not covering these kinds of things anymore because of the flood and blah, blah.
Yeah. A lot of people had to go through that where the type of flooding that happened was not covered underneath their insurance. And
Like there's that many types of flooding.
That's right. Yeah. At some later point, we'll talk about how much I hate insurance companies.
But
this is not the podcast for that. So you mentioned that you were just going with Jess at that point. What was your first date like with Jess?
Our first date?
Yeah.
Man, I can't remember what I did last weekend sometimes. Now you're asking me about my first date.
Yeah. How'd you meet?
Ooh. Okay. So I had a whole bunch of friends that had gone through the program at Momentum that he coached and taught in, which is the self-employment daytime program. And they kept talking about Jess. Honest mistake on my part. Like, I didn't even actually realize it was a man. Having had been through so many years of my business, and then I got laid off in 2009 from my oil and gas job. And I had stuck it out in my business for a couple years on my own. And then I thought this was a good time for me to expand and grow production and all of that. So having heard about this program and all of the good things about Jess, I went through the program. So that's how we met. First date. I remember now.
Okay.
I actually remember what I was wearing too.
Oh, what was
that?
Funnily
enough, a black off-the-shoulder kind of like slinky shirt with these salmon-colored pants and these cream like platform thingies.
Right, right.
Anyways.
What was he wearing?
Oh,
who knows?
Who knows? Knowing Jess, he was probably wearing some sort of slacks with a collared shirt and a sweater.
Yeah, yeah.
We went to Vino's. I think that's what it's called. Okay, yeah. Down in Mission on 4th Street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the wine bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then, I think, I'm pretty sure after that, we went to this restaurant that is no longer there by the hospital up in the Northwest. Yeah. Where the Keg is. There used to be a cute little restaurant that we went to after.
Oh, nice.
And I think we drank too much wine.
Is there such a thing?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Four or five bottles in. Debatable.
Maybe it's like, oh, it's tomorrow already.
Yeah.
So you both eventually decide to open up your own business together. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that decision. Like, why did you decide to go into business together?
I mean, it just makes sense. Being an entrepreneur, it's nice to find an entrepreneur partner, business and life. It's not, actually, we were thinking of putting on this class like / workshop about how to work together as people in business and in life together. And then another one on how to talk to your non-entrepreneurial partner about your entrepreneurial ventures, because it is tough conversations. And if you're not there, then you don't understand, right? Like, so many people going through the Momentum program that have had their spouses or their families, their parents put a kibosh on their business 3 months in because they weren't generating revenue. Like, 3 months in, you're barely got your shit figured out. Yeah, right.
As a very new entrepreneur myself, I very much sympathize with that. I think you have this idea in your head, like, everyone's going to understand my idea right out of the gate and everyone's going to love it. And it's like, no, it's a lot of convincing people.
No.
And a lot of terrifying conversations or days where, like, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's hard when you don't have the people closest to you backing you up. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, you know, when I lost my job in oil and gas there, my mom would like daily go back to a job, go back to benefits and go back to vacation time go back to, like, you know, Friday afternoons off and Jean Fridays and all of that. And it's like, no, it's soul sucking. But to have, like, can you imagine, that's your parents. So that's like one thing you can kind of tune them out. But can you imagine having your spouse be like that and then knowing that they have a job and they're carrying the household bills if your business isn't profitable yet, right? Like,
it's a lot of stress.
It is. It's huge stress. I mean, some days I think I'm crazy because you have two people in a relationship that are entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah.
And that could be volatile all on its own with the economy and, you know, not having that steady paycheck come in every 2 weeks. So, yeah.
Now, I asked you to be on this podcast partly because you were literally right outside the door when I leave Media Lab here. But there is a specific partnership that, that we formed here. I'm wondering how you decided to go and find the people to fill up this co-working space.
Yeah. So, I mean, intentionally and non-intentionally, both at the same time, we started the space, as you well know, with the idea of serving the parent entrepreneur community. Mm-hmm. And as you know, also, we've had some hiccups in that area for many different reasons, which I'm not going to get into right now. But, you know, the intentional part of how we fill up the space is, I guess, a little bit of woo-woo. Like, we believe that we're going to attract the right people and that the partnerships that we enter into are all going to work out for the best no matter which way they go. So mm-hmm. that part is intentional. And then also going out and actually like talking to people that we intentionally want to bring in, like yourself. So we had the idea of putting in some podcasting booths. We mm-hmm. started on the second floor. We're now on the third and second floor. So on the second floor, while we were still down there, we wanted to put in podcasting booths and equipment in. And then I found you on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, screw this. Why reinvent the wheel when there's somebody right here that's already had the idea, have been thinking about it, working it out for like 2 years, I think, at that point, for you. So I stalked you.
Yeah, that's right. You were my digital stalker for a while.
Yes, I was. And, you know, it's so funny what happens in people's minds, because we put people up on this pedestal, right? And it might be somebody like Brett Wilson, or it might be somebody like yourself that we haven't met yet. But you look at people and you kind of get this idea in your head of what they're going to say and how they're going to react, and like this whole story. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone does this, but
I'm filling the gaps with like, it's obviously going to go this way.
Yeah. I have very overactive imagination, so that happens to me all the time. But, you know, like I had the story and I was so scared to come talk to you. And I'm like, what if he says no? And then you're just like the nicest dude ever.
Oh, well, that's nice.
I found you on Twitter. I kind of checked out all of your other social media. I looked at some of your videos. I think I even, I don't know if you blog. Do you blog?
Not really. No.
So maybe,
very minimal.
Oh, it must have been something on Facebook.
Probably like
that
a Facebook
I read.
Post.
Yeah. And then I just reached out to you. Mm-hmm. And I remember, actually, I was trying out this new calendar system of recording my meetings. Do you remember that? When
yes.
I texted you and I'm like, we're supposed to meet 15 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. If you can't make it, can you... And then I felt like such a bitch after.
No.
Because I was trying. It is true,
because I remember getting that message of like, no, we're supposed to meet like 15 minutes from now.
Crazy.
Like,
crazy. Yeah. But I was trying a new way of scheduling myself. And I can't remember what it was now, because I don't do it, because it didn't work, because I kept doing that to myself, where I like put my meeting time before so that I was early, because sometimes I can be late. Mm-hmm. Anyways. And after that conversation and me sending you that messenger text, I'm like, he's never going to want to talk to me again. Like, Lena.
Yeah, that's all right. It was an interesting courtship, if we can call it that.
Yeah.
Because I remember having that conversation at the mall, mm-hmm. and then you invited me to come and take a look at the space.
Yeah.
And I think you had just gotten this third floor at that point. So it was a lot of like imagination work, because there's like empty desks and like kind of, well, not garbage, but there's stuff all over the place. Yeah. So it wasn't as prettied up as it is nowadays. So you can actually see what the space looks like.
Yeah. Well, because we had just taken over and the people that were in here before just left everything mm-hmm. behind. So we were just in the process of getting the movers to come and take it all down to the basement, to storage. And you know, that happens a lot. You ask people to buy into your vision, and hopefully you're a good enough storyteller that you can paint that picture for them and that they buy into the vision.
So the Bridge is a co-working space. Why a co-working space? I think it's very interesting here in Calgary, and the fact that, I don't know if it's still true, but especially when I started my partnership now with the Bridge, Edmonton had like one, maybe two co-working spaces, and at that time Calgary had eight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've just kind of exploded and had more co-working spaces since that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of weird, right? Because people kind of lump co-working spaces into the same bucket as accelerators and government-run programs and all kinds of things. So I don't think we were talking to you when we started talking. There was a whole bunch more up in Edmonton than... you could find, but they were inactive, right? So, or they just had their membership that was kind of like a bunch of peeps that got together and said, we want to work together, so we'll start a co-work space. But yeah, when we started with the idea and kind of started talking to realtors and all of that, there was four co-work spaces in Calgary.
And those were what? Those were Work Nicer,
Assembly, Collective 1212, actually no, five, because there's one, if I have my magazine issue, I could tell you, but I can't. I have them all listed in the first issue of Rhizome, but yeah, there was like five co-work spaces, Assembly, Work Nicer, The Commons, Collective 1212, and this other place that I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of, just down on the C train line.
mm-hmm.
kitty corner to the park, to Olympic Plaza. Yeah, so we were supposed to be like, what, the sixth co-work space in Calgary? And then by December of 2016, we were one of like 20. So literally there was 15 or so that just cropped up in 9 months.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, there's a huge explosion. And maybe that's partly to do with Calgary being such a huge oil and gas sector. And when that had kind of a falling out,
so that
there's
much
so much
estate.
Free space, or not free space, but lots of open space here in
almost
downtown
free,
Calgary.
And a lot of
yeah. So people just wanting to get in on that real estate. It's interesting because you've rolled that into being part of the co-working alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. Oh, so just to touch on your
yes.
first question there. I have no clue how I knew the word co-working, but Jess and I had gone through a whole bunch of business ideas, mainly around supporting parents, not necessarily just entrepreneurs, but parents. And then I said, why don't we start a co-work space for parent entrepreneurs? So I honestly have no clue how I knew what co-working was. I think it was just part of that, like, co-working had mm-hmm. become a little bit of a buzz and
sure.
like a trendy thing at that point. Early 2016. So yeah, Co-Working Alliance. So we were the founders of it. My idea was to do a co-working bar hop. And we got together with Alex from Work Nicer and said, why don't you contact your peeps? I'll contact my peeps. We'll do that that bar hop. And then somehow it turned into a co-working alliance with an actual board and board meetings and
mm-hmm.
all of that.
Just adding more work to yourself.
You know what? It's fun, though. It's like we talked about earlier, you know, if you don't have supportive family and parents and all of that, it's nice to have people within your industry. So we get together once a month and it's like your family getting together, right? But
yeah.
It's a family by choice.
Well, it's an interesting facet of Calgary. And maybe this happens in other cities and I just don't hear about it. But especially here in Calgary, there seems to be this new idea of not necessarily competing with one another, but helping each other out and still being comfortable that you're going to survive, that you're going to draw the right people to you. The craft beer industry that's exploded here mm-hmm. in Alberta is very similar, where there's, I forget what it is now, like a dozen or so craft breweries here now in the city, but they're not trying to put each other out of business. They're actually helping each other, showing them how best practices, where to get discounts on equipment.
Mm-hmm.
They're all helping each other out to, you know, build up that industry. And it sounds like the co-working alliance is in a similar way trying to like beef up the co-working spaces here inside of the city.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when you see a red car, you see all the red cars.
Sure. Yeah.
The whole collaboration thing. It's not new. It's growing, definitely. But I think you're still going to find that old school mentality of doing business where it's, you know, every man and woman in for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole bunch of us that have realized that, you know, with the economy, with so many co-work spaces cropping up, with all of these things that are happening, you need somebody to talk to. Like, we go over to Alex's all the time and have a tequila or a whiskey and
sure.
just kind of shoot the shit and say, like, what do you do in this situation? And they say, well, what do you do in this situation? And it's just nice to have that person that's been doing it for longer than we have.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have, that's had success. And you know what, honestly, I've never understood that competing mentality to begin with. So this was just a natural way of doing business for us. Yeah. And just one more thing, like we're a co-work space. How can we ask our people, our members, to co-work and collaborate if we can't do the same with
mm-hmm.
Alex, who's a block down from us.
Literally a block away.
Right? So.
That's such a great idea and something that I really appreciate that you hit on, in that if you have this business, but you're not exemplifying or being a great ambassador of that idea outside of the business, mm-hmm. then why would I want to work with you in the first place?
Exactly. You know, it's like, I don't know, being somebody that promotes green
and drives, you know, a Hummer or
fair
something
trade.
Like that.
Yeah. Or, you know, you don't compost or you just throw everything in the trash or you know, don't pay a living wage to your employees. Like,
right,
you just can't.
You can't get on board with
you
all
can't,
of that.
You can't, no.
What makes you keep going on? Like, what's the thing that drives you the most?
Stubbornness, for one. I just... Like, there's obviously some points where you just have to quit and you have to know when to quit. But a lot of the times it's like that cartoon that you see where it's the guy doing the digging and in the ground.
Sure.
And he's like so close to getting the diamonds or the gems and he just stops and turns back.
Sure.
Right? There's no end point in business. It's not like, okay, we hit 10 members, so we're good. Or, you know, we have this room booked consistently, so it's done. It's like, there's always something more and there's always a lesson to learn, like personally and in business. There's always somebody to help. There's always another person you haven't talked to that could be like an amazing opportunity for partnerships or that could be an amazing resources for your people, for your members. Yeah, there's definitely mornings. Like I was just talking to Scott Lawrence from, I'll fill in his company name when it comes to me. but it's like, you know, you wake up some mornings and you're like, what the hell am I doing? Seriously. But yeah. I think that just comes with being an entrepreneur.
For sure. What scares you the most still?
Failure. Like I said, you know, like both Jess and I are entrepreneurs. And if we don't have contracts and we don't have work, we don't have a house and we don't have food on the table, right?
Right.
So that's scary. And that's always in the back of your mind. And I think that's what makes you hungry, or that could scare you shitless and stop you dead in your tracks and make you go out and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Depending on, not everyone has a high risk tolerance and not everyone has a support system they can fall back onto if, you know, everything goes to the crapshoot. And I mean, we don't. So it keeps us hungry.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't have to be. I think to your point in the other question, every industry, doesn't matter what industry you're in, it is constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some slower than others, but you have to be open to that and seeing those new opportunities and understanding that if there's not something that's driving you or something that's scaring you a little bit, I think you might be, it's time to either retire or try something else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see it with big retailers like Toys R Us. They're going out of business, right? They're not innovating. They're not keeping up. The story about, I think it was Blockbuster who didn't want to buy Netflix,
for
right?
For $12 million.
They passed up Netflix because they didn't believe that was the way of the future. You can't be stuck in that mentality. And yes, it's okay to cling to tried and true business methods and ways of doing business. But I think that there's always innovative ways of doing it. Like marketing will always be marketing, but you know, it used to be Facebook. Now it's like Facebook Live and then God knows what's next.
Sure,
right?
Exactly.
So you just have to go through the motions of growing.
Yeah. It's in, yeah. Online media like podcasting and YouTube videos and that sort of thing, that's sometimes changing every 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. So like, what's the next big thing or what's this new feature that's coming out? So having to constantly be on the hunt for what is that next big thing. Converse question, what is the best part of your day?
Talking to the people and just helping them out. Like we just had Steve brought on a new person in his team and he hadn't worked in a co-work space before. And he's like, do people actually collaborate in the space? And I was able to right off the bat, give him 5 examples of people that have worked together in the space. And then later on in the afternoon, he was able to witness Steve, his boss, and Pete Myers from another one of our members here, collaborate and strike a deal. So, you know, being able to talk to the people, finding the problem and finding a solution for the problem.
Finally, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are just starting out?
It kind of sounds cliche, but you really have to surround yourself with good people that are able to tell you, like push you when you need to be pushed and tell you to slow down or do something different. And then you have to be able to take that advice and apply it, because there's, like we've talked about, there's so many points in your day that are so scary. And it's not like scary once a month. It's like daily scary sometimes, right? Especially in recession town like Calgary, where you don't know if you have another month worth of business coming your way to keep yourself going, right? But yeah, just surrounding yourself with good, supportive people that have good, solid advice that they can share.
I think that's solid advice. Thank you so much for being a guest here on the podcast, this new venture that I'm starting. You know, here at Media Lab, we're doing podcasts and videos and all that sort of thing. But I always enjoy hearing other people's stories, and I've just found that I literally know nothing about Romania, and now I want to go and find some more stuff out.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful place to go, and like I said, I really, yeah, it's my home.
That's cool.
Really, yeah. So thank you for having me. It's been fun. Don't take anything personally. That was 15 years ago.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And as soon as we end this interview, we'll probably still talk, because literally I can walk around and see you in 10 seconds.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much for listening. As I mentioned in our first episode, the best thing you could do right now is to tell people about this show. Text your friends, post online, shout out of your window. That's right, scare the local children. Any help would be greatly appreciated. We'll talk soon. Have a great day.